Okay, here we go. Rav Ovadia Yosef was one of the most beloved and revered Rabbanim of the past century. And he has, and will continue to have, a lasting impact on the halachic framework and the identity of Sephardi Jews all over the world. He was a Talmud Chacham, and he was a Rebbe.
The last Gadol
that we spoke about here was the Bava Tzur Rebbe.
No, I'm saying for the Sfarnim.
The Ben Ishchai, we didn't talk about the Ben Ishchai.
I'm saying he was the first.
I'm going to talk about it, yeah. He was a Talmud Chacham, and he was a Rebbe. He was a Shul Rav, and he was a Dayan. And later in life, he becomes a political power broker. Okay? Can you get the door there, please? Okay. Now, interesting stuff about Rav Ovadia. Unlike most Gedolim of our day, he comes from humble beginnings without any yichus. All right, he wasn't the son of. He was born in Baghdad in 1920, moved with his parents 4 years later to Eretz Yisrael. He lived in a poor neighborhood in Yerushalayim. As a kid, he never played ball. He didn't play games. He just sat and learned. I probably would have made fun of him if I was in the same class. Right? I'm just saying. He just did. That's what he was into. He learned. His only hobbies were calligraphy and drawing. And it's a cool story that I heard from my friend Rav Shai. He said, I didn't find any books, but he told me the story. Once Rav Ovadia was dying on a court proceeding that dealt with Siruv Get, a person who was refusing to give his wife a get. And Rav Ovadia was bored. People were presenting different things. So he started drawing, the face of the husband. And then the husband bounced. He just ran away in the middle of the court proceedings. And the police, this was a long time ago, they had no photographs of him. But it turns out Rav Ovadia's drawing helped them catch the guy. He's like the official sketch artist. His doodling while being bored, he drew a picture of the guy. That's what they used. They caught the guy. So, everything comes in handy. His favorite books at the age of 6 and 7 were Tanakh and Torah Tamima. All right? And mine were comics. But okay. At the age of 9, he received a Musar Sefer called Reshit Chachma, and the inscription reads that he received this Sefer as a prize because he had recited about 500 Mishnayot by heart in front of the great Rabbanim of his Kehila. 9. 500 Mishnayos by heart. You guys are about 19. You probably haven't learned 500 Mishnayos in your life. Forget about by heart. Okay, just think about where we're standing here. Okay, except for you. Now, as a kid, he learned in Yeshivat Porat Yosef, affectionately known here as Pojo, before the War of Independence. Then it moved after it was destroyed and it was conquered, and the yeshiva moved to the Bukharan neighborhood. Rare was the family that had the luxury to allow their sons to just learn, because everyone needed help supporting the family. And Rav Ovadia's family was no different. And therefore, when Rav Ovadia was not yet Rav, when Rav Ovadia was 13 years old, his father pulled him out of yeshiva and said, I need help in the family-owned grocery store. When the Rebbe came in one day, and he's looking around for his prize student, he says, where's Rav Ovadia? He said, he's not coming to yeshiva anymore. Right? The Rebbe went to the Rosh Yeshiva. The Rosh Yeshiva went to the grocery store, and he said to Rav Ovadia's father, I need your son in yeshiva. And he said, I need my son in the grocery store. And the Rosh Yeshiva said to him, I will stay here, and I will help you. I can be of a lot more service to you. I'm bigger, I'm stronger. Let him go to the yeshiva. His bittul Torah is a bigger sin than mine. This is the Rosh Yeshiva. This is what he said about a 13-year-old kid. I wrote Tzadok.
Not my Rosh Yeshiva, I'm saying the...
Oh, I don't know who the Rosh Yeshiva... I didn't write that in my notes, the name of the Rosh Yeshiva from Parat Yosef when he was 13 years old. I don't know. But this is what he said. His Bittul Torah, the 13-year-old, is a bigger sin than my Bittul Torah. Okay? He pushed him, And finally, the father gave in after the Rosh Yeshiva promised him that he would become, you know, great in learning one day. And he assured him of his future greatness, and he gave in and let him go back to yeshiva. Yes?
Did he literally change his name?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what it was. Like Yosef, but yeah, he switched, yeah.
He switched it around?
Yeah. I don't remember why. I right now, I don't remember. I didn't write in my notes. I did read that. I don't remember why. I also read who the name of the Rosh Yeshiva is. I don't remember why. I didn't write it down, so I don't remember that. But we have a bunch of books, and I'm sure it says it in there. Now, his poverty prevented him from buying books. Right? We sit there and saying, who's going to Meisharim? Okay, go pick me up this. He couldn't do that. He did work out, though, with a local bookseller. Every night at closing, Ravadi would go there, and he would let him take one book overnight, and he returned it the next morning. Okay? And when the bookseller said to him, why are you only taking it for one night? He said, well, I already read it and memorized it. So he would take a sefer, he would read through it all through the night, he'd commit it to memory, and he'd return it. There were times people would report him, he'd go to libraries of Svarim, and he'd be up on those, you know, big library ladders to get to the top shelves, and he'd just be standing there for hours reading a sefer. Right? He just learned through a sefer, standing on the ladder, wouldn't bother going down and sitting, he'd just like stand up there for hours and read through a sefer. Story that I heard that in 1935, we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about Rav Soloveitchik. So I said Rav Soloveitchik came in 1935 to Eretz Yisrael to campaign to be the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv Yaffa. As I mentioned then, the way you campaign is by giving shiurim. Now, 1935, how old did that make Rav Avadia? 15. Okay, we say he's born 1920. Rav Soloveitchik is giving a shiur. And he started like quoting, like, I don't know, like a Rashba and Yevamos or something like that. They said, it goes something like this, I don't know, you know, exactly. Someone have a Rashba and Yevamos? And some little kid in the back started quoting. And he said, oh, good, good, good. Bring me the Rashba. He didn't have the Rashba. The little kid was about to Yosef, who just knew a random Rashba and Yevamos by heart. And was just quoting it. Because doesn't every 15-year-old know random Rashbas by heart in Yevamos? I don't know. So, now.
This was in America?
This was in Israel. This was in Israel. Rav Soloveitchik came to Israel to campaign to be the chief rabbi in Tel Aviv. His career officially begins at the age of 24. He's appointed dayan in a local basin. At the age of 25, he becomes Rosh Yeshiva and member of the basin in Cairo. He spends 2.5 years in Cairo. He taught many shiurim, but he also met with lots of bureaucracy, lots of apathy from the leadership. And eventually he resigns and he returns to Eretz Yisrael. Now this experience, very important to have bumps in the road. This experience, all the ups and the downs, helped mold his leadership qualities, his concern for fellow Jews and their shemirat ha-mitzvot. Many shalot and shuvot will later appear in the first volume of Yabia Omer from this time period, you know, when he was a young man in Egypt, when he moved from Egypt to Eretz Yisrael, his own personal Yitziat Mitzrayim, he wrote and published his first sefer appropriately on Hilchot Pesach, since he had his Yitziat Mitzrayim, that is called, anyone know? Chazon Ovadia. This came out in 1952. This is the first of 53 published svarim. The Ravadia published 53 svarim. Okay? As a show of respect to Rav Avadia, you go to many Sephardi shuls in Eretz Yisrael and you will find all 53 svarim. Like, you'll just find rows and rows of Rav Avadia svarim. Right? They'll have, like, every sefer that he wrote. The truth is, his teaching career actually began at the age of 17. Okay? When he was 17, the Rosh Yeshiva set him up as a position for him to teach Balei Batim. He taught Gemara, he taught Halacha to Balei Batim in the community. And already at a young age, he caused controversy. Okay, this would be the motif for him for his whole life. He was controversial. Okay, at the age of 17, he started telling people that they should accept the Maharan. Maharan referring to who? Nope. The Machaber of the Shulchan Aruch, They should accept the Shulchan Aruch over the Ben Ishchai. The Ben Ishchai is Rabbi Yosef Chaim, who is an Iraqi gadol, accepted by most people in that community as the last word in Pesach. And comes some 17-year-old and say, no, don't hold like him. I know you've been doing this, your father, your grandfather, you know, but we should go back and we should hold like the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Avadya felt that the Ben Ishchai was too machmir, basing his decision on Ashkenazim, on Kabbalah, so you said Kabbalah, right? And now people resented his attitude. Who are you? Telling us not to like the Ben Ishchai. He was soon called in to speak to the Gadol of the Iraqi community, who asked him, are you familiar with the Ben Ishchai? To which he responded, test me. After a discussion, the Rav Paskin that Rav Avadya can teach however he decides is fit. And Rav Avadya wrote, there's 17, right? Right? Rav Avadya wrote later that a judge has to rule the way he feels. Okay. Now, more than that, he felt that everyone living in Eretz Yisrael, at least Sfardim, should follow the Mechaber. He felt that the Mechaber was the Mara da Asra for Eretz Yisrael. Mara da Asra means the rub of the community for Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's a nafkamina if you're a Mara da Asra? The community should follow their town rabbi, even if he's a minority view. Right? So it could be that only your rabbi says like this, and everyone else. But if he's your shul rabbi, he's your town rabbi, you should follow him. And he felt the Mechaber is the Mara da Asra, at least for Sfardim, anyone that's living in Eretz Yisrael. He felt the Ben Ishchai went away from traditional sources, and therefore the return to the Mechaber was both traditional and revolutionary at the same time.
He thinks that Ben Ishchai was all based on Kabbalah.
Kabbalah, Ashkenazim, and true Sfardim, we should be following the Mechaber. Okay? Now, this was difficult for many in the Sephardi community to accept. They have, for many years, been living, accepting the minhagim of the Ben Ishchai. Now they're told, you know, just throw out your customs, follow the Shulchan Aruch. Not an easy thing. It would be applicable for the Ashkenazim in this room as if someone said, forget the Mishnah Berurah, it's going back to the Rama. What do you mean, forget the Mishnah Berurah? That's what he's saying. Forget the Ben Ishchai. We're going back to the Mechaber. Okay, this is what he's saying. Give you an example. When people argue with Rav Avadya Yosef for going against the Ben Ishchai in regard to the shi'ur fechala, how much kemach you need before your mafrish chala, he said, I'm relying on the Rambam. I'm relying on the Shulchan Aruch. The Ben Ishchai went away from these sources. What was their response? Well, the Ben Ishchai obviously knew what the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch said. So, trust him. He said, that's not the way we decide halacha. He must have known. I'm showing you sources. You're telling me he must have known. Show me the sources. Right? I often have made the similar statements when I argue with Haredi friends and I give them like sources about Eretz Yisrael and I go, well, my gadolah must have known those sources. I go, well, tell me the counter arguments. Don't tell me your gadolah must have known. Okay? So, okay. Beseder. In his first sefer, that we spoke about Chazan Ovadia, the Rav Harashi of Eretz Yisrael was Rabbi Yitzhak Nissim. Okay, there's a shul named after him. I guess he must have lived right around the corner from where I now live, right? And he was Iraqi, and he took offense at Rav Avadya going against the Ben Ishchai, and he publicly rebuked him. Now, even though Rav Avadya at this time was a young man. He did have a skamot. He wrote his Yabia Omer, his first sefer. Oh, I'm sorry, Chazon Avadia. He had a skamot. A skamot from some of the rabbani you might have heard of, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. I quoted him on Shabbat. Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. Then he was obviously young, but you know, the Rebbe of Rav Avadia, of Rav Nevinson. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. We have some of his farm in the library here. Okay. They all gave haskamah to the Chazon Avadia. As with many machlakot l'shem shamayim, unfortunately, it went too far. And there were extremists that took Rav Avadia's sefer, the Chazon Avadia, and they burnt it with their chametz. When Rav Avadia heard about this, he got physically ill. right? People burnt his sefer. Why? Because he went against the Ben Ish Chai. This is how crazy people get. Rav Nissen got even more upset when he saw the first volume of Yabia Omer. That also went against the Arizal. Rav Nissen went to Rav Yashiv, who, after speaking with Ravadia, actually gave him his own haskama on the Yabia Omer.
You know? Yashiv?
Rav Yashiv. Yeah, so he didn't do what Rav Nissen wanted him to do. Instead, he wrote him haskama. And he said, there's no chiyuv to hold like the Arizal. And even though Rav Avadia was only 33 years old when he published volume one of the Yabia Omer, his name begins to spread, and he receives many awards for Torah literature, and it was clear that Sephardi Jewry had a new voice. One look at the Yabia Omer, and you are blown away by the Bekiyas, the breadth of knowledge that Rav Avadia has. It was unmatched by anyone in our generation, probably for many generations. He would quote from Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebe. He would go through all Sfarim, earlier Sfarim, later Sfarim, stuff that had been forgotten and lost, not well known. He would quote from introductions to Sfarim, from Torah articles and journals. It was like the joke was, it was worth writing a Sefer around that time, because Rav Avadia would probably quote you, because he quoted anyone who wrote anything on the topic. So like you probably get your name in a Sefer. When people would say he had a photographic memory, you'd get insulted. What do you mean I have a photographic memory? One student pulled out a random Gemara and started reading from a long Tosos, and Rav Avadia started saying word for word every single word in the Tosot. And when the student looked at him incredulously, he said, I reviewed that Tosot 200 times. Photographic memory means it's a gift. Says, this is hard work. I reviewed that Tosos 200 times. It said in his massive... What? Rav Avadia said it. He reviewed that Tosos 200 times. That's why he knows it. In his massive library of Svarim, if you pulled out any Sefer and started to read from it, he would be able to complete the sentence. Okay? Any two lines, he'd be able to start, you know, complete the, any book, he'd be able to complete the sentence. And two lines of any Sefer, he would tell you what the Sefer is and who wrote it. Right? They went to him when they found art, like different segments in like the Dead Sea Scrolls. They found that in Cairo. They also found all sorts of different pieces of manuscripts. There's a page here, a page there. And Rav Avadia, from the 2.5 years that he spent there, says, I recognize the thought process. This belongs to Rav so-and-so. This was said by Rav so-and-so. He could tell you, just from reading a little bit. He read it, he remembered it. He knew all the Sfarim. In one tshuva, in Yabia Omer, this is just startling to even say, he quoted over 500 sources. Okay? All of us put together could not probably think of 500 different Jewish books. Okay? But he was holding in 500 different sources on this particular topic. So he'd tell you what. The topic happened to be Dud Shemesh, using a solar heater on Shabbat. Okay? So he went through so many sources. Bishul B'chaman, Shabbos, Bishul, you know, do I have to do that? And he went through 500 different sources on the use of a solar heater on Shabbat. Once, when they came out, Bar Ilan came out with the computer, right? That has all the shit. So they had a challenge. You know, the chess masters play the computer? Rav Avadia against the Bar Ilan computer. They had a random Shaila. They asked Rav Avadia, tell us all the sources that deal with this. Rav Avadia sat down, wrote down 27 sources. They gave it to the Bar Ilan computer. They looked down, 28. Okay, not bad. Then they looked and they saw. 28th source was Rabia Omer, his sefer. He didn't quote that. Right? He was a computer. Now, as far as Sephardi pride, when he was a member of the Beis Din in Petah Tikva, he refused to accept the takana of the Rabbanut Rashit against Yibam. Okay? You should know the Gemara has a whole question. We know, based on the Psukim, Yibam is preferred over Chalitza. We spit at the guy and call him names for not doing Yibum. Ah, you lowlife, you did Chalitza. Yibum is preferred. But the Gemara, already they have a suffix. Should we do Yibum? Maybe you don't do Yibum because you always, you know, had a crush on your sister-in-law. Maybe she has a very beautiful bank account. I don't know what the reason is. We don't know if you're doing it for the right reasons. So the Gemara has a suffix, and the Gemara leaves it up in the air. Ashkenazi custom was, do Chalitza. But Sephardi custom was, even preferred. In Eretz Yisrael, the Sephardi chief rabbis gave in to the Ashkenazi chief rabbis that we prefer Chalitza. Rav Avadya was arguing, Yibum is the way for Sephardim, and it was reinstituted that a Sephardi in Eretz Yisrael can do Yibum. Lamaisa was hardly done, because it is a little bit weird to marry your sister-in-law, but it was done. Rav Avadya, like, at least it's on the books, it can be done. There was another case. He was sitting on the basin, and the Ashkenazi Rav transliterated the name of the husband, and Rav Avadya said, that's not the way to write it. He's from Baghdad. I grew up in Baghdad. I know the way that it should be written. And the Ashkenazi Rav, who was like the head of the basin, wouldn't accept it. Rav Avadya resigned. I'm not going to be in the basin. I think the get is puzzle. You're misspelling his name. Later on, when he was on the basin Shel Yerushalayim, he refused to sign his name on the Sefer Hilchot Pesach that was put out by the chief rabbis of Tel Aviv. Why? Because it said, Orez v'kitniot asur v'sfardim matirim. Rice and kitniot are asur on Pesach, sfardim and matirim. Until they changed it to Orez v'kitniot mutar v'ashkenazim osrim. Kidneyos is mother. Ashkenazim, crazy machmer. Write it like it is. Don't tell me, they're makel. They're not makel. Sfardim know what the halach is. Or is a kidneyot on mutar. Ashkenazim, they're machmer. Write it the way then he put his name on it. Okay. As chief rav of Tel Aviv, he reinstituted the Sephardi custom of getting married all the way up until Rosh Chodesh Av. Used to be, again, Ashkenazim don't get married the whole 3 weeks before Tisha B'Av. And the Sfarda Rabbanim said, Pseda, we'll go like you. And he said, why? Why? We don't hold from that. Only from Rosh Chodesh Av. Sfarda don't want to get married until Rosh Chodesh Av. By all means, go ahead. Reinstitute it. Now, with the decline of Parat Yosef after the War of Independence, many Sfardi boys went to Ashkenazi Shivas and took upon themselves Ashkenazi customs and style. And Rav Avadya began to set up Sfardi-style yeshivas so Sfardim can maintain their identity. 1969, he became the Sephardi chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And he wore the traditional garb, the traditional robe, which became his public image. From then on, that's the way he would always appear in public. His colleague at the time in Tel Aviv, and then later on, they would both be chief rabbis of Israel, was Rav Shlomo Gorin. They were together chief rabbis in Tel Aviv 4 years, and then they were chief rabbis of Israel together for 10 years, and the two of them could not be more unalike. Right? There was like nothing in common. Rav Gorin was the Rav Rashi of Tzahal. He was a general in the army. He was part of the Haganah earlier. While Rav Avadya was dedicated to Torah. Both wrote dealing with modern issues. Both dealt with them creatively. Both won many prizes for halachic literature. But each saw himself as the number one rabbi and the other guy, his sidekick. And because of that, lots of friction between the two of them. When he assumed office of Chief Rabbi of Israel in 1974, he was asked by Defense Minister Moshe Dayan to set up a special Beit Din to deal with all the agunot from the Yom Kippur War. Okay, in all, there were 960 cases. 960 cases of either unidentifiable or missing or not immediately retrieved bodies from behind enemy lines. Okay, even in the Mishnayos and Yevamos, which we learned, if 3 days goes by, so then we can't really, be certain that we could identify the body. So a lot of times it took a while till we got the bodies back. And therefore, there were 960 cases of women who were waiting to see if they can remarry. Moshe Dayan chose Rav Avadya because he knew no one questioned the validity of his decision. And Rav Avadia went case by case, crying over files, traveling all over the country, interviewing officers and soldiers, and he explains Volume 3 of Yabia Omer, his reasoning. In the end, he was able to matter every single aguna. Now, in his life, listen to this. He was matir 9,000 agunot. 9,000 agunot. Rabbi Willig from YU said in the hesped for Rav Avadia when he passed away that we, the RCA, Beitin, we tried to be matir as many agunot as we could after the Twin Towers collapsed. There were some cases that we couldn't. We went to Rav Avadia and he found Haterim. And listen to this crazy thing. 9,000 cases, not once did a husband come back. Not once did he make a mistake, and all of a sudden we found the husband. Every single case where he said, yes, he's definitely dead, you can remarry, no one ever came back, you know, to like mess things up. 9,000 cases. Now, listen to this. This is the most amazing story. It's in like a couple of books that I read. At his funeral, his son gave a hesped. And this is what he said. Rav Avadia had a heart attack. He was rushed to the hospital. And they said, we need to do surgery. He asked the doctor, can I have 3 hours to go back home? And the doctor said, yeah. His son said to him, why? He said, I'm in the middle of writing a tshuva to be matir and aguna. I think I can finish it in 3 hours. I'm worried if the operation doesn't go well, I won't finish it. She'll never be able to remarry. He went back. He wrote his tshuva. Only then did he come and have his heart surgery, you know, open heart surgery, whatever you have to do after a heart attack. But first, he had to be matir and aguna. Take me 3 hours to finish my tshuva. Over his career, he had many important psakim. I'll give you some examples. These important psakim, if they're important, it means they always ruffles feathers. So first of all, Rav Avadia absolutely says that one should rely on the Heter Mechira and Shemitah. Right? Shemitah, absolutely should rely on the Heter Mechira. The Rabbanut HaRashit has relied on the Heter Mechira from way before the state was born. Okay? Before the state was created, already Rav Chanan Spector in 1897 gave a Heter, and then later on Rav Kook, before there was a state, reinvigorated and wrote a whole sefer on it. And Rav Avadia, before he was the chief rabbi, he wrote in Yabia Omer that you absolutely should rely on the Heter Mechira. Now the Chazon Ish had come out opposed to this, and as a young man, Rav Avadia went through and attacked argument by argument of the Chazon Ish, and his Yabia Omer, volume 10, pages 37 to 43, he rips apart, point by point, the Chazon Ish's reasoning not to rely on the Heter Mechira. Okay, when he's the chief rabbi later of Tel Aviv in 1972, he explains even further that Heter Mechira had far-reaching implications, and not using it would be detrimental for the kashrus in general in Eretz Israel. And he did this even though he learned in Haredi yeshivot, and he incurred the wrath of the Haredi community for doing this. But a posek has to paskin the way he feels. Then he incurred the wrath of the Dati Lu'umi community, the religious Zionist community, because he came out in 1979 and said, you can trade away land for peace. He ruled that human life is more important than land in Eretz Israel, and if experts say it will bring peace, then it's mutter. Because of this, Shas allowed Yitzhak Rabin to push forward with Oslo, the Oslo Accord, and this incurred the wrath of the religious Zionist community. By 2005, though, Rav Avadia had changed his mind when it came to the disengagement from Gaza, from Gaza, not because he changed his psak halachically, because situationally, he was now convinced that ceding land would just bring more danger to Am Yisrael, not bring peace. This has always been Rav Nevensal's psak, that giving away land would never bring peace, it would just make things worse. Rav Avadia came around to that way of thinking. Another psak that angered the Dati community was that yeshiva bachrim, who are learning full-time, should have a dispensation, you know, exemption from serving in the army. But at the same time, he then angered the Haredi community because he said that the conversions that are done by Tzal are absolutely acceptable, and no one could retroactively be mevatel conversions that were done. They're absolutely okay. So what we're seeing over here is being a posek is not a popularity contest, right? We're not trying to make people happy, not trying to stay popular. You paskin how you feel. When it came to Ethiopians, okay? So we have a whole bunch here in the yeshiva. I don't know if the people here are Jewish or not. He felt the ruling of Jewish leaders is more important than anthropologists. And therefore, since the Radbaz, had been in Ethiopia and writes and says that I've seen them, that they're Jews, that's more important than the anthropologists who said, no, I can tell from their skin color or from their facial features that these are Goyim or whatever. He says, we don't care about the Goyish anthropologists. We go by the Radbaz, and they're full-fledged Jews. Okay? Now, if you say they're full-fledged Jews, some people wanted to argue, don't say that because then you have a bigger problem. What's the problem? Mamzeris. We're learning Gittin now. You think the Ethiopians knew how to do proper Gittin? No. Which would mean if they didn't know how to do proper Gittin, so then every remarriage would actually have Mamzerim. Better for them not to be Jewish. He says, not worried. Why? Because their Kiddushin wasn't done well either. So we don't have to worry about the Gittin. They never had Kiddushin. They were living together. Living together doesn't need a get. And therefore, they're not Mamzerim. They're halakhically Jews. The previous psak before him was that they should do Geirut L'chumra. Okay? Just be on the safe side. And he as well said, if you can do that, that would be better. But for example, when a Kohen came to him and said, I'm in love with this Ethiopian girl. If she converts, I won't be able to marry. He says, you can marry. No conversion needed. Right? She's a full-fledged Jew. He ruled blood tests are inadmissible in Beis Din. And DNA as well. We do not check DNA to determine paternity. Why? That would lead to a floodgate of Mamzer's cases. Let's just check to see who the father really is. He said we rely on the Gemara that says Rov Bi'ilot Eitzel Baal. We assume that most of the time a woman has sex with her husband. We don't have to assume otherwise. We don't need to get a paternity test. We don't need to check DNA. And he said even against DNA evidence, this is not, and this is the practice of the chief rabbinate. We don't look at those things. Rov bilot eitzel ba'al. Yom Ha'atzmut. Ravadia said in Yabia Omer that one should say halal on Yom Ha'atzmut without a bracha. Okay? Why without a bracha? So firstly, because he said, why without a bracha? Because in order to say a bracha, it has to be a hatzalah for all of Klal Yisrael. This was for the Jews in Israel. This is found in the view of Rabbeinu Yonah in Brachot. Rav Goren argued that it is the Nes in Eretz Yisrael is for all of Klal Yisrael. It has ramifications. The Jews are all over the world. In 2000, they argued in a lot of things. In 2009, in a shul in Har Nof, Rav Goren told me he was there when Rav Avadia said this whole address. I just saw it in print. He talked about the need to sing to Hashem for the Nes, Ashir Lashem Kigamal Alay. They were obligated to say halal. He spoke about how life under the British mandate was unbearable and hardly any Jews, you know, were living here. There were only about 600,000. And now, Baruch Hashem, in 2009, there's over 5 million. Now in 2022, there's close to 7 million. And if only for this, the government was formed in Dayenu, and we need to sing halal for it. But we should daven at the same time that the government should come Yirei Shamayim. But we can't deny the Nes. Can't deny Denise. He also discussed, look how many more Talmud Torahs there are, how many Talmud Chacham there are in Eretz Israel, as opposed to the state and Baruch Hashem and all of this. We should think of all of this. We say halal. He then also printed a sefer Atchalta de Geula, and he said Chayev Lahagid Halal, both out of bracha, because not a complete kibbutz galiot. Okay, because you guys are still in Chutz Laretz. That's why. Otherwise, we could say hell. That was then bracha. And he said, it's not an ace for all of Klai, so he said before. Also, he said, there's no peace. And there's a low level of Shmirat HaMitzvot. And therefore, it's only the Atchalta de Geula, but not yet the Geula. So, halal, yes. But the bracha will be when we have the Geula Shlema.
Did you say anything about Yom Yerushalayim?
Not that I saw. I'm sure he did. but not that I came across. I'm sure even if you just Google what he thinks about Yom Yerushalayim, you probably find it very easily. Okay? In regard to his style of psak, he would often say that we Sfaradim are like Beit Hillel, Ashkenazim are like Beit Shammai, they're way too machmir. He, for the most part, he has some chumras, but for the most part, he has lots and lots of kulas built upon with multiple snifim lahakel, bringing from here and from there, and what about this one, or all these different ideas to build up a kula. His learning was based on halacha. He felt that Ashkenazim in yeshivot, they spent so much time on pilpul and svaras. And he said, look, I enjoy that too, but bottom line, we need to know what the halacha is. Can't just be theoretical. You know, what's the hezbron and the machlokas? That's great, but what, how do we paskin? We need to know that. His style of psak was that we are unable to see, to decide the analysis of the Rishonim. Rather, we need to look at the Achronim and see how they analyzed the Rishonim, and then look at the majority of the Achronim and go with them and their analysis of the Sugya. Now, critics of Rav Avadya's approach, and there are many, say, so Rav Avadya's great. He is like the Bor Sid She'enu Mabe Tipa. He's like the cistern that doesn't, no leaks. He remembers everything. But who's better, the Bor Sid or the Ma'ayana Mitgaber, someone who's Mechadesh? Do you want to have the encyclopedia or the Nobel Prize winner who's creative? So Rav Avadya is just telling you what everyone before him had said, without any novelty to his approach. Not only that, people say he takes every opinion into account, and he's viewing, I don't know, Rav Moshe Feinstein the same as he's viewing some young Israel rabbi who wrote in a Torah journal. You say, well, it's one against one, you know. So that's not the way we should decide the halacha also. You know, why certain opinions were rejected. He doesn't get into, you know, oh, this was rejected because of this svara and this. So, like, for example, just a totally different way of viewing is Rav Moshe Feinstein. He didn't look at what everyone said. He analyzed the sugya. He looked at the basic Rishonim, maybe a couple of Achronim, and then based on Svara. But he wasn't bothered if someone wrote him, oh, but so-and-so says differently. He would say, okay, if you could show me why my Svara is incorrect, beseder. But just tell me someone says differently, doesn't bother me. But for Avadya, it would be, well, how many people said? How many people said? Rav Avadya was so big on spreading Torah. After he passed away, my son Eli, who was here for Shabbat, some of you saw him, his wife, who you didn't get to meet, she's Sephardi. So he was at his in-laws, and the Rav of his father-in-law Shul was talking about just one day he decided to follow Rav Avadya around from morning to evening. And Rav Avadya was like in seven different places giving shirim on so many different levels to so many different communities. To this community, it's storytelling, this community, it's deep in this country. I'm a spread Torah, and I, in any way that I can. I remember he spoke when I was in BMT, when I was Shana Aleph in BMT. He said, famous Gemara, that we were in our mother's wombs, we were taught all of Torah. And,
Sota.
What? It's a Nida. Doesn't say it in Sota.
Well, 40.
That's who you're going to marry. Yeah. Okay? A Nida, it says, you're taught all of Torah. And then, Kadosh Baruch Hu, like, you know, taps you over here and you forget, you come to the world. So he says, obviously then, the purpose of this world is not just to learn. It was just to learn. We could have stayed in our mother's wombs. We're supposed to do. Right? So you don't. You have to go out there and you have to teach. You can't just learn. He felt that every Jew can be touched, especially Sfaradim. And he would appeal to them through stories. He'd go town to town. Thousands would come to hear him. He spoke on the radio. He had a live question and answer. People would call up, ask questions. And off the top of his head, he'd just be quoting sources, and he would give answers to the questions. Today, they have a similar thing. They just have like a recorded question. The rabbi did all his homework, and then he gives an answer. You know, and they just have, you know, we have a call-in, but the call-in was actually yesterday. And then today, the guy's, you know, coming with his answers. Ravadji is like, okay, you know, just knew it all. Later, he would speak on television, and Motzei Shabbat, tens of thousands of people will listen in, mixing Torah and stories and jokes. He spreads Torah through his svarim. Yabia Omer for the Talmid Chachamim. Yechavadat for the layman. And now his son put out the Yalkut Yosef, which is basically replaced like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, like Sfaradim. It's like what everyone goes to, the go-to safer for Sfaradim. Cool story. I found in, I think, the book Maran. Okay? 15-year-old kid, son of a Holocaust survivor, was living on the streets. He became a criminal. On one Shabbos, he's playing soccer. Ravadi's coming out of shul. He kicks the ball. It smacks Ravadi in the head. Knocks his hat off. Okay? Ravadi picks up his hat. Walks over to the kid. And the kid walks over to Ravadi. Gets the ball. And he says, Ravadi, want to play? Right? All the kids start laughing. And he says, Ravadi says, where are your parents? And he looks him straight in the eye. He goes, dead. And Ravadi says, do you want to have lunch with me? And he invites him over to his house. And he gives him a bed to go to sleep in. He goes to sleep. When he wakes up, Shabbos is over. He says, what would you like to do now? He goes, I'd like to go to the movies. Ravadi gave him money. Go to the movies. And he came back. And he kept coming back a few more times. And then he started to notice Ravadi was about 12 other kids. And he started to have conversations with them. After a while, he started to get more serious. Ravadi bought him tefillin, started to put on tefillin. Then he started going to yeshiva. He then became a rav. He became a dayan. Ravadi was not only the Masada Kedushin for this person, but later on he was the sandik at his grandson's bris. Right? This is the connection that he, you know, changed this person's life. In 1983, when he finished his term as chief rabbi, he embarks on a new career. He's pushed into it by Aryeh Deri and Rav Shach, and now gets involved in politics. And he helps find the Shas party. So most people think Shas party is, oh, after Shas, you know, Shisha Sardim Mishnah. Shas stands for Shomrim, Shomrei Sfardim, Guardians of the Sfardim. And he becomes the leader of its Moetzet Chachmei Yisrael, the Council of Torah Sages. Sfardim were not really represented in the government. Every party had a couple of token Sfardim. Sort of like, oh, maybe the Sfardim will vote for Likud because they have a Sfardi in the number 4 seat. They vote for Labor, they have another Sfardi in the number 5 seat. I mean, that's a token Sfardim, but they didn't have any clout. Okay? So, plus, there was a westernization of the state, which caused many Sfardim to lose their ethnicity. Shas chose to create a proud Sfardi heritage and Rabbanim to guide them. And now, voters for Shas spanned from Haredim to Mesorati, because even traditional Sfardim felt that tradition is important. And we shouldn't be second-class citizens. So they started, and this is the cool thing that happened. I have to tell you a personal thing. Ravadi got involved in politics. I was very upset. Very upset. I said, what a mistake. Because now, no one comes out unscathed from politics. There's so much mudslinging. I said, like, how terrible. Up until now, he's just known as the Gadol Hador. And now his name is going to be muddied. And I have to admit that I am totally wrong. Because what happened was, as the Shas party got bigger, see, they were then needed to form a government. So if you need to form a government, Shas would say, we'll go with whichever group gives us the most money for our institutions. Right? We don't really care whether you do A or B or C. Those things are in your realm. We want money for our institutions. So they said, we'll go to the highest bidder. You know, if you give us that, we'll go to you. And because of that, they got money for their school systems and yeshivot and kolels. And they had public schools where you can come and they'd have longer hours. Most parents had to work. You didn't have to pay now for a babysitter in the afternoon. We'll teach you Torah. We'll give you a hot meal and it'll be for free. Well, if I'm Sephardi and I'm not opposed to tradition, why would I not want my kid to learn a little bit about our tradition, get a hot meal, stay longer in school? All right, I'm down. And because of this, you know, things change. Rabbanim, they did cause controversies. Rav Avadi, they would fly him around the country in helicopters. He'd promise Olam Haba to anyone who votes for Shas. He would curse out all sorts of politicians who would say things contrary to whatever Shas held. And his name was smeared in the press. Ravadi said it was all worth it if today there are tens of thousands of children who are now saying Shema Yisrael. This is what he said. It's worth it. And throughout the course of his day, he basically spent 12 minutes a day in politics. as he was taking off his tefillin. So all the politicians would come over, they ask him all the shilas, and then, otherwise he was back to learning. But he was the face of the Shas party, and it can be easily said that Rav Avadia was probably the only Rav in Israel that every Israeli knew both by name and face. Every Israeli knew him by name and face. Coming to the end. He was not without opponents. The chief rabbi, Sephardi chief rabbi who succeeded him, Rabina was friendly with him as well. We have pictures, and he used to come to the yeshiva, of Mordechai Eliyahu. Okay? He was the Rishon Lezion, and he was opposed to one uniform minhag for all Sephardim. Okay? He was opposed to saying you have to hold like the Mechaber over the Ben Ishchai. Sephardi community for centuries have been holding like the Ben Ishchai. We don't have to change all the minhagim. He was absolutely opposed to disengagement. And he said that Shas needs to do tshuva for having supported Oslo. Others opposed Rav Avadia for moving Sephardim away from traditional Sephardi approach. Sephardi approach was always to be involved in the army and the job market, higher education. And now they basically became Ashkenazim. Right? Look at the Sephardi Rabbanim here. Right? Rav Darmoni's grandson came and they landed on Shabbos, the Haftorah, like an Ashkenazi with the oyoyoys. I said to Rav Darmoni's like son-in-law, I said, wow, you raised a real Ashkenazi there. Right? This is what happened now. All the Sephardim go to like these Haredi Ashkenazi yeshivas. Right? And people were disappointed with Rav Avadia. They said, you had the backbone to stand up to Ashkenazi when it came to Psak. But when it came to Ashkafa, you just said, okay, we'll accept the Ashkenazi, Ashkafic way of looking at things. But the most important motto, with this I finish, his mantra was "La'achzir atarat liyoshna," to bring the like crown back to its days of glory. Bring back the glory days. Sephardim should not be regarded as second-class citizens, not in the Torah world, not in society. And that's why we had many non-Orthodox Jews who voted for Shas, because they were giving them a ga'ava Sephardi, some pride. Restore kavod for the Mechaber over the Ben Ish Chai, which he felt, I said, was influenced by Ashkenazim. Set up school system. His Shelot and Shuvot quoted many Sephardi poskim that no one ever heard of. If you think about it. Think about our learning now in yeshiva. The Rishonim, almost all of them, Sephardim. Achronim, name an Achron that you ever quoted in your Gemara share. All we talk about, all the Ashkenazi, Rav Avadia is bringing in all the Sephardim. He's quoting in his tshuvas all the Sephardim. No one, who even talked about Sephardim? He's quoting all the Sephardim Achronim.
What's the Beit Yosef Sephardi?
Beit Yosef Sephardi, but after that, who do you talk about? The Taz and the Shach and the Magen Avram and the Nodi Yehuda and the Gra and the Pnei Yoshua and the Nesivos. And like, who's quoting any Sephardim? Rav Avadia's quoting. Rav Avadia's quoting all over the place. Who would never quote in Ashkenazi literature. His funeral had between 800,000 and 1 million people.
Were you there?
I was not. Okay, I was in yeshiva. I felt it was my job to stay here and teach. Yeah. But all the Kol guys bolted. It was the largest funeral in Israeli history and maybe all time. I mean, think about it. When do you really get that many people at one time? Almost a million people. He was probably the most important Sephardi figure since Rabbi Yosef Kaira, with his influence to be felt long after his death. And I'll end with one beautiful quote that I saw someone write. It can definitely be said, "Mi Yosef ad Yosef lo kam k'Rav Avadia Yosef." We'll stop there. Shkoyach, guys.